Hello and welcome to Jibe Talking, the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles and we've got another packed show for you this week, including interviews with a couple of the sports superstars. We talk to the winners of the Rolex Middle Sea Race, ICAP Leopard boat captain Chris Sherlock and Andy Soriano, skipper of overall winner Allegri.
There was one very emotional moment there once we crossed that line. It was truly a moment that will always be with me.
The IFDS Disabled World Sailing Championships were held recently. We hear from Alexandra Rickham, gold medalist in the Scud class with Nikki Birrell. And in the America's Cup, Matt Sheehan tries to find out what exactly is going on, as are we all, with Brad Butterworth and Russell Coutts.
2007, Alinghi was saying it's so critical to be near a big European population. And all of a sudden they've taken it to a small town. It's really a real estate development from what we can see.
But first, as always, it's the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. Thomas Royant is first home in the Mini Transat in Faber, France. André Soriano's Mille 68 Allegri is the overall winner of the Rolex Middle Sea Race. And the first two boats, Team Origin and All for One, arrive in Nice for the Louis Vuitton Trophy. OK, let's look at the Rolex Middle Sea Race, where ICAP Leopard took line honours to go with the success at the Fastnet and ahead of their challenge for the Sydney to Hobart. Russ Hargreaves spoke to boat captain Chris Sherlock.
Yeah, no, it's terrific. We worked pretty hard for it, and it has sunk in, and we're just getting the boat ready to ship off to Australia as we speak.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is. It would be a fantastic achievement were you to be able to pull it off, obviously having got the Fastnet under your belt and now this race as well, to then move on to Sydney Hobart. I guess that's obviously the big, big goal.
Yeah, it sure is. It's the only one that we haven't won on any of the boats over the last few years. And that's certainly the big event one of the three big events for us. And it's all been a build-up to that. So looking forward to it a lot. We just hope there's a bit of breeze.
Yeah, and I guess obviously from having got these two victories under your belt, the confidence of the rest of the crew and everything going in must be pretty much spot on, I would hope.
Yeah, no, we're pretty confident in the boat and within our team. 90% of the guys have done all the racing with us coming into the Hobart, so you can't do much better than that. We've got a great team, the boat's going well, and we just need a bit of lady luck with the weather, as I say.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, just having got through the Middle Sea Race with some pretty stormy conditions, what can we expect, do you think, from this time of year from Sydney Hobart?
Well, it's the old classic, isn't it? A normal, typical Sydney Hobart would be a start and then meet the southerly buster on the first evening. Unfortunately, the last three times that we've been down there, that hasn't been the case, and it's been a benign run all the way to Hobart. That clearly doesn't suit the type of boat that we've got. So we're hoping for a typical Sydney Hobart with a nice northeasterly start, and then a southerly buster. So we'll see what happens. It's a great race, as they say, and we're very much looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And just going back, if we can, for a couple of minutes to look at your win a couple of days ago in the Rolex Middle Sea Race. Obviously, you were going for the competition record, which looked very much on for a while. And I guess a little bit frustrating that you narrowly missed out by, what, just over half an hour?
Yeah, like any of these big races, our main focus is for a line honours win. We have a look at the back, we keep it in the back of our head about an IRC win, but it's quite difficult on this boat the way that we've set it up with the larger sails. We get penalised quite heavily. It's the way it is. I mean, yeah, we missed out on the record by half an hour, but it's, again, that's just the luck of the draw. We were a little bit surprised with the weather forecast coming into the finish. The grid files had it at sort of 15 to 20 odd knots of wind coming down back in towards Malta, and it actually never materialised. It was around 12 knots of wind. But had we had the wind, it would have been quite easy. But never mind. It's there for another day, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Keeps you motivated, doesn't it? In terms of the conditions as well, Chris, obviously, I mean, we saw several boats obviously retire with some pretty significant damage. It was a pretty sort of blustery and stormy affair, wasn't it?
Yeah, the smaller boat, I mean, we were quite lucky in that we got off to a pretty good start and through the straits to Messina. And then going around Stromboli, we were around Stromboli, and when that front came through, it would have affected the guys behind us probably more than it affected us, and then even more so the smaller boats in the fleet would have got hammered. So it's the luck of the draw. We, you know, the rich got richer, so to speak, by being in, you know, just ahead of that front. But yeah, it was boisterous for, you know, 12 hours. I guess, you know, I'd sum the race up in that it was a third, a third, a third. You know, the first third was great getting up to Messina. Going across the top of Sicily, we certainly had better days at sea. It was a very confused, lumpy seaway, very squally, which makes it difficult. You know, you're, 1 minute you're underpowered, then you're overpowered. Very frustrating. And then once we got around the top there on our way home, it was another great sail.
Leopard taking line honours, but the overall winner was Allegri, and Russ caught up with the delighted skipper, despite a heavy cold, Andy Soriano.
Well, the emotions are really sort of being just completely overwhelmed. Really, it was overwhelming, you know, beating very, very good boats across the line and really coming in behind Borges and Leopard, which in itself was a great achievement. But then to have really, you know, started realizing that we had a good chance for the handicap and overall honors was just too much. There was one very emotional moment there once we crossed that line. It was truly, truly a moment that will always be with me.
Where would this rank in your career so far, would you say?
Oh, without a doubt, it's probably the greatest achievement I've ever done offshore, and certainly, you know, has to be the best performance that I've ever had as a sailor. So it's really right up there.
Brilliant.
And you know, I've had some very close calls over the years. In '83, we were behind Lou Abrams by 10 meters, and the Derwent gate went against us on Bandido, and that we lost that one by literally the tidal gate, and this one was just amazing, and really a culmination of many years of racing with a big in between of lots of cruising racing. So it really was just a great conclusion, I would think.
And if we could just talk briefly about sort of, you know, the conditions and some of the rivals. We've touched on it before, but obviously the conditions, particularly early on and so on, were very difficult, and you were up against some very experienced boats, some pro boats that have got an awful lot of financial sort of backing behind them and so on. So I guess for both of those reasons, it's very sweet as well.
Yes, it is. It is, because personally, you know, we Dave Williams and Nipper, who were involved in the project, and my son, you know, and myself. I mean, one of the objectives was to put together a bunch of guys that were professional but still not up there yet, and some really keen amateur and good Corinthian sailors, with a young designer and a young sailmaker, a young tactician in Will Best, the sail designer in Kevin George, and Mark Mills is the designer of Allegri. And you know, we gelled as a team with the conditions that were thrown at us. I mean, they started off in sort of fairly calm conditions, and just building up. By the end of the Messina Straits, we had lost two out of our three nylon kites, so we were only left with the A4. One, the A2, we had to bear away in a squall that suddenly appeared from nowhere in less than a minute, and were off at towards Mykonos at 27 knots. And then we blew the A1 again on another squall coming through, and so that limited our sail inventory to our furling asymmetric spinnakers. And then as we got to Stromboli, conditions got worse, and we took the reefs in, but we began to see that, you know, the four mini maxis were, you know, within a mile of each other at Stromboli. From then, we could see Leopard in the far distance, and we could see Beaugest, and from there, that point, an hour or two later, Bellamente retired, and then Rosebud. And from what I understand, you know, the damage on Rosebud was you know, could quite serious, because she did it quite a bit. You know, the slamming was very, very tough on her. We saw both with the storm jib. We saw Rand that had to bring down their mainsail. They had some issues with battens, as I understand later. And with the reefing, we were asked by the Beaugest people if we, you know, really slowed down. I guess we said no. We kept the boat going, and they said, well, it certainly looked like it, because some people said they even saw our keel out of the water. And this was from the Rand group that were right beside us. So it was very, very rough. We nearly lost both life rafts when a bad wave hit us in a staunch and broke, and three guys careened into them. But we kept plodding on and persevering. The storm finally, or the conditions finally got a bit better in terms of wind strength, but the sea became, you know, just very, very confused. But at this point, we were match racing with Runa Rosa for the next 8 or 9 hours. And we then both put up kites as we turned the corner. We broached, and then I think they had to run off as well. And after that, we parted ways and really didn't see them till we got home. So that, in a nutshell, was the race. A tough one, and one where Will Best was very determined on his strategy and had great confidence on his weather predictions, all of which were spot on, and obviously helped by lots of luck. But I think Will earned the luck, and the boys under Chris Main's leadership just responded way beyond all of our abilities, and we just sailed our hearts out.
On to the America's Cup, and eyebrows were raised by Alinghi's choice of venue, Ras El Khmer in the United Arab Emirates. BMW Oracle Racing not happy. Due to take place in February next year, so with time running out, Oracle say the event's location is illegitimate and unsafe. Matt Sheehan asked their CEO, Russell Coutts, why they had such concerns.
Well, we are particularly concerned about it, especially now given the current events going on in that part of the world. You know, it's really close to some, obviously, hotspots, particularly for an American team. And, you know, you guys know our position on the, you know, with respect to the non-compliance with the deed of gift. In our opinion, it doesn't comply with the deed of gift or the court rulings. But we nevertheless want to get a race out the way in February, so we sent a team over there to look at the venue and so forth, and sort of look at it in good faith to try and find a solution. But we are very concerned about the current events in that part of the world. You know, the race course is some islands that are under territorial dispute with the UAE and Iran, that are within, I think, 20 miles or even closer of the course, I believe. And there's other concerning reports as well. And so that's obviously a concern. And also the fact that, you know, in 2007, Alinghi was saying it's so critical to be near a big European population. And all of a sudden they've taken it to a small town. It's really a real estate development from what we can see. And we're wondering why. Well, you know, how is that good for the America's Cup fans and and so forth. It really doesn't add up, and frankly, we'd certainly like to hear more explanation as to why this venue's been chosen. You know, from a sailing point of view, if they wanted to choose a light wind venue, which may be one of the criteria that they've selected this venue for, let's face it, there's hundreds of light air venues around the world. And why we have to be within that close to such a hot spot, let's face it, in terms of international situation there, that's a serious question that needs to be answered.
Can you just remind me why you said about the deed of gift, why you believe it doesn't comply with the deed of gift?
Well, the deed of gift says in the northern hemisphere when it's in certain months of the year, and southern hemisphere when it's in certain months of the year, and if the cup match is in February, it should be in the southern hemisphere. Now, the court made an exception. They said Valencia or anywhere else in the world. What does anywhere else in the world mean? It means anywhere else in the world that's deed compliant. You can't have this race on Lake Geneva, for example. Because why? Because it's not deed compliant. It's not free from headlands and so forth. So in other words, anywhere else in the world means you've still got to read the deed. If the Lingi had wanted to have it in other places, there is a mechanism in the deed, and that is both parties can amend the rules by mutual consent. But one party can't unilaterally just say, hey, I'm going to ignore the deed and do what the hell I want. You know, if they had wanted to try and amend the deed, the mechanism to do that was to come and speak to us and say, hey, listen, these are the reasons why we want to go to a different venue. Can we speak about this? And if the reasoning had been reasonable, we would have seriously considered it, because we want to get this race on in February. In fact, it's been pretty clear, I think, that we've wanted to get this race on as soon as possible, all the way through this. You know, originally it was a 10-month time period, as per the deed of gift. That's been delayed because of court issues. Frankly, I think that's the sailing world, and everyone wants to get this race on as soon as possible. But we don't want to do that if there's at any cost and at any risk. You know, we're not prepared to compromise that far. The sailing world is owed some sort of explanation on this. There's been a lot of things that have happened throughout this whole, dispute. That haven't really been explained, but this is one that really is curious, shall we say.
Well, to keep things fair, Matt asked a Lingi skipper, Brad Butterworth, why Ras El Khmer had been chosen. And we have to apologise for the quality of this interview, but we think you can pretty much make out what Brad's trying to say.
Well, we looked around for a place that would be a place that we could sail these boats safely and in reasonable conditions. And so we looked all over around the place in terms of where we could go, South America or everywhere really. And that part of the world, the Emirates, sort of jumped off the page for us, and it happened several years ago when we went there for our winter training. You know, we could have picked anywhere to go when we were sailing for the 07 Cup. We could have picked anywhere, and we wound up going to Dubai, So it's the same sort of, it's the same thought pattern, the same process we went through. And of course, we were looking for someone to host us and someone to, take it on. And Russell came all keen.
But, some might say that there are a lot of places you could go to that have got those kind of conditions and, light weather conditions and open sea, but you don't feel like that.
No, I do feel like that. I think there's other places you could go, but the fact is that there's not that many places that are willing to, host the teams and go out of their way to make us welcome. There's not that many places are putting their hand up for it.
And obviously one of the things that's cropped up today with the response from Oracle is that they claim a number of things, but one is that it's not safe.
Yeah, well, I just don't know how to answer them, because, I mean, I've just been watching Sky TV, I've been watching the you know, they've got the golf on, and St Andrews and Carnoustie and around there, and all these guys, they play it's like a pro-am day, you know, so like Hugh Grant's playing with somebody, and there's another guy, another celebrity, or some other different guys that play, you know. It's quite an interesting format they have. It finishes in Dubai, in the Desert Classic, you know. It's 40 minutes away in the taxi. I mean, come on. I think if it's good enough for those guys to play down there, it's good enough for us to fail down there. I just can't see that as a valid reason to not have a game down there. Three races for that thing.
That's one of the issues that appears to be a stumbling block at the moment. But is it true to say that actually the real issue comes down to the argument about the interpretation of the rule, the ruling by Justice Khan, that the match shall be in Valencia or any other location selected by SNG? It's that interpretation that's at the core, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. But, I mean, everybody read that, and nobody... I was actually at one over the ICF, over the rules part of it, which was held 3 months ago now, and she actually started her proceedings by saying, oh, well, we know the venue and we know what the measurement rules are to Oracle, and they said, yes, we do. And there was nothing voiced, there was no issue voiced then of what was going on.
Right.
So they didn't voice their concern right then. They knew the venue, they'd known it for a week at least. I mean, yeah, we can argue over what she said and what she meant, and that's up to the lawyers, but yeah. I mean, to me it's just frustrating, because I mean the boats are built, they, you know, they know what they have to be. It's no big deal. I know that they, you know, we can get them going on the start line there, race them to the top mark and down again. I mean, that's what we want to do.
Finally, the Disabled World Championships. Russell Hargreaves tracked down one of the winners of the Scud class, Britain's Alexandra Rickham.
Hasn't really sunk in. Obviously, we've like put everything into it this year, and kind of with our disappointment in Beijing last year. It's still kind of a bit overwhelming and kind of a bit out there at the moment. And celebrations-wise, yeah, obviously we went out and saw the sights of the coastal towns of Athens on Sunday night, but also I think both of us were just tired that the night kind of ended a little bit earlier than expected.
It's often the case, isn't it, where you just kind of, you know, just think about the achievement, and it almost the sort of the satisfaction and the pride and the pleasure is enough in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly. It is more than enough, I think, really.
Oh, brilliant stuff. And obviously you just alluded to that, having been fifth, I think I'm right in saying, in the Paralympic Games in Beijing, and to have had various other sort of close finishes. Like, I believe you finished second to the people that you eventually beat from America in the race itself. To have sort of, you know, turned that around and to have had that satisfaction must make it very sweet as well.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of silvers behind them this year, so really this was, like, our, as far as we were concerned, kind of our last chance this year to sort of finally seal sort of, yeah, all the work that we put in, and yeah, it couldn't have been better actually to finally take the US down in, I suppose, in some ways, because we have a friendly rivalry with them that's been going on for the last couple of years.
Yeah, this is Scott Whitman and Julia Dorset, isn't it? Are they sort of friendly rivals then, are they?
Yeah, no, very much so, because we've spent quite a lot of time with them this year out in the States, and did like a month's training over the summer, so so I would say it's definitely a friendly rivalry.
And they
did a bit heated at the big regattas.
Because they just about pipped you in Weymouth and Portland as well, hadn't they?
Yes, yeah, they did. That was, yeah, it was hard to take, because obviously we wanted to kind of take it on home waters, but at the same time, our major focus, as you said then, was for the world. And that's a title you want to win, so we're very, very, very happy about that.
And just a word, obviously, on your crewmate, Nikki. I'm right in saying that you guys sort of swapped roles not so long ago.
Yeah, it's only been 10 months now, so yeah, at the very beginning of the year, we swapped roles just to to kind of mix things up, and also there were a few rule changes and stuff. But it's gone really well, and Nicky's been excessively patient with the fact that I'm really inexperienced helm, and so he's had to put in a lot of time in kind of bringing me up to speed. And alongside that, our new coach Ian Barker has put in a lot of time and kind of managed to balance, I think, the roles within the boat based on our experience levels, and so that's really brought us forward, I think, massively.
Absolutely, and I guess you and Nicky, having been together for a while, in both of those roles, I guess that sort of that kinship and that kind of camaraderie, again, is a very strong part of your victory as well.
Oh, no, very much so. And I think, I think it's played to, it's been a strength, really, that we've been, both of us have been in the separate roles, because we can both add to what the other one's trying to do and kind of fill in the gaps all the way, along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And just while you're here, obviously, yours was the gold medal of the Games, but also we've quickly mentioned a bronze to Helena Lucas as well, which is a fine achievement too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always amazing when we go. And in fact, in some ways, you're more excited about your teammates when they do well, because it's sort of, it's just a great thing. Last year when we went to the test event, and both the Sonar team and we medaled, it was twice as good the feeling, and it was just great to see Helena on the podium as well.
And just in terms of British disabled sailing as a whole, obviously having had these five medal successes in Greece, how does that set things up now for hopefully continuing to build from that?
I think it's really positive, to be honest with you. I know that that there was a lot of disappointment in Beijing across the whole team, because we all felt that we underperformed and there was a bit of bad luck and all sorts of bits and pieces. And I think really this is our chance to make a massive comeback. And obviously with it being on home waters this time, we all really, really want it twice as badly. So I think this is just laying down hopefully the road for the next three years.
Well, that's it for this week. Join us again next time when we'll have all the latest from the world of sailing. And remember to check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.org.